I first want to thank you for guiding a process which has enabled us to examine and to consider what may be the most complex issues to come before this committee. This committee has gone further than ever before in attempting to blaze a pathway towards affordability for all Americans that has eluded us for decades, if not a century. To your credit, Mr. Chairman, you have predicated this process on substance rather than politics, and it's been remarkable for the absence of rancor, and that's a tribute to you and to Senator Grassley, who also shares an abiding concern for health security for Americans and who has thoughtfully and constructively offered myriad approaches to the bill before us. Indeed, the last 2 weeks, we've considered more than hundreds of amendments. We've heard legitimate proposals from both sides about the proper role of government in providing the answers. I think it's clear we all struggle with the appropriate equilibrium, but I don't think that there is any doubt that everyone here is sincere in the solutions that they espouse and that we all recognize that there is a problem. In that light, as we contemplate the course of our action here today, we should also contemplate the decades of inaction that has brought us to this crossroads. Indeed, with 1 in 4 Americans either uninsured or underinsured, the track record is clear. The status quo approach has produced one glaring common denominator, and that is that we are having a problem that's growing worse, not better. Skyrocketing health care costs have driven up premiums, having the potential to send the entirety of our health care system into a death spiral, because costs are outpacing inflation 2 to 3 times. We're seeing employer-provided coverage is predicted to reach $30,800 a decade from now. We can anticipate spending $33 trillion over this next decade. It's really akin to the Titanic and turning the Titanic around before it hits an iceberg. But the difference is that the captain did not know there was an iceberg, but we do. At the same time, people are duly apprehensive about what Congress will do in reforming a system that provides the best quality care in the world. They're concerned it might result in government takeover of health care. They're understandably troubled about what reform will mean to them. And they also rightly question as to whether or not this is the appropriate point in time, given our state of the economy, to take this undertaking. They also question Congress's ability to get it right. And that's why I have argued vehemently, consistently, and persistently, as the chairman knows, against arbitrary deadlines, and I've communicated that to the president as well, because I think that we understand that these issues are complex, and most certainly the American people intuitively understand that this issue is not only complex, it's costly, and given the enormity of the task, that it should take time, and that's exactly what we should give it. And if there's anything that I've learned over my more than 30 years of legislative experience, that the best way to allay people's concerns is to systematically address these issues, their views, their viewpoints, and the alternatives. Now, the mark before us produces some bipartisan landmark reforms, which is to end the unfair, flagrant insurance practice policies that have devastated Americans for decades. We're familiar with them in rescinding policies when people get ill, or rating premiums on the basis of health status or gender, or not providing coverage to Americans and denying that coverage so that not every American has the ability to access affordable health care. This bill also does navigate ideologies. It bolsters what works in the system and engenders quality and competition, lowering premiums, achieving savings, which is critically important, as well as changing the accelerating cost curve of health spending. In addition, it creates individual and small business exchanges, which Senator Lincoln and I have worked on, along with Senator Durbin, in creating small business health insurance reform. This is critical because it will create a powerful marketplace for creating that competition and lowering premiums, which is so critical, by providing access for the very first time to national plans that will be offered across all state lines in all 50 states, which I propose, because I think that that is going to be so important in injecting competition in the marketplace. I'm also pleased that in this mark includes a provision to expand low-income affordability for people in the exchanges, adding significant number of small businesses that will have access to the exchanges immediately, which is also going to be critical in creating and enhancing the power of these exchanges. As CBO has indicated, these exchanges will help tens of millions of Americans to have insurance and to achieve savings in coverage. At the same time, I have shared my Republicans' concerns about vast governmental bureaucracies and governmental intrusions. That's why I oppose the amendment for the so-called public option. I co-authored an amendment with Senator Schumer regarding reducing the threshold for the individual mandate penalty and requiring Congress to review and reassess that mandate altogether. I happen to think that's an issue we should continue to revisit because the onus should be on the government to achieve and accomplish the primary goal of this legislation, which, of course, is affordability. Undeniably, affordability remains and continues to remain my paramount concern. I think that if there's anything that we have to do, Mr. Chairman, is to continue to wrestle with that issue to absolutely ensure that all Americans have access to affordable health insurance plans and that we absolutely know that they are affordable. And I know the charts that the CBO has produced demonstrates that if you start to compare the different plans and what people will be able to access for affordable health insurance with the tax subsidies and the tax credits. Absolutely imperative, and it will produce change, but we have to make sure that it's absolutely guaranteed. Other concerns I have is Medicaid expansion, its implication for future state budgets, Medicare reimbursement, particularly as it affects home health care, nursing homes. They don't realize the benefits that other providers will do because of the reduction of the number of uninsured and uncompensated care. And I have other issues as well. It's not an exhaustive list. So is this bill all that I would want? Far from it. Is it all that it can be? No. But when history calls, history calls. And I happen to think that the consequences of inaction dictate the urgency of Congress to take every opportunity to demonstrate its capacity to solve the monumental issues of our time. As I've said throughout this process and through the Group of Six, that there are many, many miles to go in this legislative journey. As one national story characterized it recently, people do have concerns about what we will do with reform. But at the same time, they want us to continue working. And that is what my vote to report this bill out of committee here today represents. It's to continue working the process. I do it with reservations because I share my Republican colleagues' trepidation about what will transpire on the Senate floor, what will emerge in the House-Senate conference, and how indeed the Finance Committee bill will be merged with the HELP bill. And on that point, I want to be perfectly clear, Mr. Chairman. I happen to believe that as the finance bill is integrated with the HELP bill, that we have to absolutely be sure that it's done in strict accordance with the CBO's interpretation of the Finance Committee's provisions. That's absolutely essential so that we maintain the integrity of the score of the mark before us and on those provisions that are part of that legislation. Secondly, before I vote on a motion to proceed to consider the unified bill, the merged bill between HELP and the Finance Committee, I certainly think we should have a final CBO score on the statutory language that is available on public websites so everybody has a chance to review it. That's consistent with what my Republican colleagues have argued for. It's what Senator Lincoln initiated in a letter to the Senate Majority Leader, along with seven other Democratic centrists. It's certainly my bottom line as well. Finally, I say that my vote today is my vote today. It doesn't forecast what my vote will be tomorrow. As Henry Wadsworth Longfellow said, a fellow Mainer, he said, "Great is the art of the beginning, but greater is the art of the ending." So as this process goes forward, I hope that we give due deference to the scope and the complexity of the issue before us. and that we do everything possible to develop a greater propensity for bipartisanship and achieving broader support for this legislation, and resist the temptations and the impulses to retreat into partisanship. The majority has the votes. It has the votes in the House, it has the votes in the Senate. So it shouldn't be about the mathematics of vote counting, but rather the mechanics of getting the best policy. Because after all, 1/6 of our economy, the health security, and the financial well-being of all Americans should not be at the mercy of one vote margin strategy. I happen to believe that credibility of the process will dictate the credibility of the outcome. I recall, Mr. Chairman, when you convened this committee early on this year on the first meeting regarding health care reform, and you indicated it was your foremost priority. You also expressed a desire to do everything we could to achieve broad bipartisan support. And I know that that goal has eluded us here today, but it's something that we should continue to make it happen. I think that it would certainly engender the confidence of the American people. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.